I'm Marty Moscoane. Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm the youngest of three, and when I get together with my siblings, we talk about our parents. Even though we are parents ourselves, even grandparents in the case of my sister and my brother. Even though siblings mostly grow up in the same house with the same parents, their experience of family can be dramatically different. That can be because of personality or birth order or experience or the unique relationship they have with their mother and father. Today we're going to explore the often overlooked and underappreciated sibling relationship. And joining us is Jeannie Safer. She's a psychotherapist who specializes in the sibling relationship, author of several books, including Cain's Legacy, Liberating Siblings from a Lifetime of Rage, Shame, Secrecy, and Regret, and The Normal One. Jeannie Safer, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
I'm delighted to be with you.
I began by talking about the fact, and I have to say, my parents died many, many years ago. Mm-hmm. But when I get together with my brother and my sister, we talk so much about our parents. Why do you think that is?
I think the sibling relationship in childhood, and I'm also a psychoanalyst, so this is my kind of philosophy of life, never leave us. They're inside us. Even if you have a brother and sister from whom you're estranged or if they're dead, they're still inside you, and you're, they're with you. They are a template for every other relationship that you have. And that's why parents and children are the most important topic we ever think about in a certain sense in our own lives.
You really do specialize in the sibling relationship, and I remember interviewing you on Cain's Legacy, and you're talking about your brother. What is your interest in the sibling relationship, and what is the sort of takeaway that we should have if we have a sister or brother?
Well, my interest comes from my own experience, which, alas, is not all that uncommon. Mm-hmm. My brother and I were never friends. He envied me. My parents favored me, which I thought as a child was perfectly fine because I deserved it, didn't I?
Sure. You're the favorite one, right?
Right, absolutely. I mean, I was the adorable one. And he was really the outcast. And in middle age, I started to realize how this had affected my life, how profoundly, and that I'd never had the experience that so many people have of a brother or sister who's really there for you. Even if you don't have certain things in common or if you have different lives, you know you can turn to them. I never could do that, and of course neither could he. And this, a number of years ago, I realized that I needed to write about it. I had really ignored my relationship with my brother Stephen. I'd never even used his name, actually.
Really?
I was embarrassed by him. He's 7 years older. And when I decided to write this book, I remember I had just seen my agent. I was walking down the street thinking, what am I going to write about? And I said, I have to write about brothers and sisters who can't get along, and then proceeded to start crying in the middle of the street. So I knew that I had something that was important. I started crying myself, realizing that this experience was so radioactive.
Is there a burden on being the favorite of the parents?
Actually, there is, Marnie. It's something that we never think of, particularly if we're not the favorite. I think, oh, well, this is the great position to be in. But first of all, you don't deserve it. I mean, there's no reason why I was supposed to have it. It had to do with my parents, what I would say are transferences to me and my brother, and I fit their needs more than he did, which is really what happened. Hmm. But these things stay with us. That's my point. You don't get away from them, even if you never see them again. Every relationship you have with a peer has your brother or sister or multiple ones as part of it. Your whole life. Every issue of competition, every issue of envy, all of those sorts of things. And being the favorite was not so easy because my brother resented me. I was really robbed. We were both robbed of a relationship with each other because of that, which I didn't even realize at the time.
Do you think it sounds like in your family it was pretty extreme. It was pretty obvious that you were the favored child. But do you think all parents do that among siblings, that there's certain of their children that they just feel a special, closer connection to?
I think it's inevitable. I don't have children myself by choice. However, and probably something that had to do with my own childhood in certain ways. But yes, I don't think there's anything abnormal about having more of an affinity for one child or the other in a certain way, as long as it's conscious and as long as you work on it and understand it. There's no way around it. Mm. You know, everybody isn't equal. An equal love is a ridiculous idea anyway. Special love for each person is what I'm in favor of. However, the favoritism can get way out of hand, and when it does, it usually has to do with the sibling relations of the parents. And I'll give you an example.
Sure.
That was from a relative of mine who I didn't know very well, but I knew her family. I mean, I knew who they were. Her mother, she told me, when she was a toddler, her sister was considerably older, the mother installed a dog gate in the teenager's room to keep the baby out. And what she did, are you shocked?
I'm my eyes widen. You can, of course,
well,
tell on the radio.
More. There's more. The elder one used this opportunity to steal all her toddler sister's toys. And then the mother was angry with the baby when she was upset.
Oh, wow.
And I said to my cousin, why on earth? And I knew her mother. Her mother wasn't a crazy woman. She was actually a lovely woman. And I knew her sister, too, a little bit. I said, what possessed her to do such a bizarre thing? And she said, well, in my mother's family, she had a toddler sister. And guess who was favored? So she was going to write it by identifying so profoundly with her older sibling and repudiating the baby, to turn the tables retroactively. And this is what a lot of parents do, totally unconsciously. I think if I would have said to this woman that this is what she was doing, she wouldn't have had a clue.
We've been focusing on the difficult relationship oftentimes in families with siblings, but there certainly are families where, the children get along famously and
yes,
are their best
yes.
friends. So what is the difference there?
I think a lot of it comes down to how the parents act. Also, personalities. Look, there's some people who just have an affinity, brothers and sisters, more than others. They have talents in common. They look alike. You know, they have similar interests. But a lot of this has to do with the parents' projections onto the children. Except particularly when children don't get along when they're adults.
Mm-hmm.
When there's deep, what I call sibling strife, which is different from just normal sibling rivalry, that has roots in the way the parents acted, the favoritism, the not dealing with the hostilities, avoidance, allowing one child to bully the other, all kinds of things like that.
Is it possible, let's say there are siblings who had a fraught or difficult relationship growing up, is it possible to fix that as an adult?
Very often it is. There's good news and bad news. Yes, it's fixable. But it takes two. You have to have a sibling who is willing and interested to reconsider. I think it's a real opportunity later in life. And it's also a challenge because a lot of the sibling issues that get buried come out around wills, around a parent's illness and aging, around money. These things are really tough to deal with. But I have had, and I have in Cain's legacy, a number of examples of siblings who were quite estranged from early mm-hmm. ages and managed to work it out. And I also talk in the book about how you can do that. That I think that there are some steps that one has to take. And the first is facing the fact that you are estranged and taking the initiative yourself to addressing your brother or sister. And saying, look, I know there have been problems in our relationship. We're getting older. You're the last living relative I have, which is very often the case. 50 to 90 years, I think, as we have them.
Wow.
Yeah, much longer than any other relationship. And I want it to be better. And you take that first step. But even before you talk to the sibling, there's something else that I recommend that people do. They think about their childhood. You know, right at the beginning of the show, you were saying how they grew up with the same parents in the same household.
Right.
Well, I don't think people do grow up with the same parents, even if they're the same, if they have the same names and they have the same genetics, because each parent has a psychological relationship with their children that's different. So I know that my mother was a very different mother to me, for instance, than she was to my brother. So one of the things that I suggest that people do is try to look through your siblings' eyes. This is the hard part and the very moving part, actually. See what their experience of you was. See what their experience of your parents was. And you'll learn a lot just by thinking about it in a different way. I even have a set of questions. I say, ask yourself, who is my brother as a man, as a brother, as a son, as a professional, as a person of interest? Who is he as a husband? All of these sorts of questions. Taking yourself out of the picture, because your relationship is just so fraught, you know, when there are problems. And you start to see yourself in a very different way and the person in a very different way.
That's so interesting. I mean, you have to give up, I guess, on either your own fantasy about what you think your family was about, but also the relationship that you had with these adults, these two parents or one parent in many cases, and be able to see it through someone else's eyes. That's
absolutely
tricky.
Right. It's extremely difficult. But what I found is that the actual effort of doing it can change the relationship. Among other things, your brother or sister can appreciate it. I mean, there were several times after I started thinking about this that I tried to approach my brother. Mm-hmm. He's deceased now. But one of the things I said to him, straight out, I said, Stephen, I was favored enormously, and it wasn't fair. And it did me no good. He was astounded to hear it. And I think, I'm so glad I was able to say that and know it and not think, well, of course, you know, I was well-behaved and I was a good student. You know, I put that aside and said, this was unfair. This had to do with my parents' needs. And we were both deprived of each other because of that.
Hmm.
And he couldn't fix it, but I was glad that I tried.
Just because you were able to say those words to your brother.
To know those words and therefore to say them.
Right.
Yes.
And how did he – was he able to understand what you were saying?
He was astonished, actually, that I would think that. But he couldn't – at that point, he was so entrenched in his own bitterness. Mm-hmm. He was also physically ill. He died a double amputee from diabetes.
Oh, dear.
It was a very, very difficult life. With great talents, he was a wonderful musician, much better than me. But I feel like that is a certain model that people can try, because you can always change a sibling relationship inside yourself, even if you can't do it with the sibling, even if the sibling refuses. And as a result of writing originally The Normal One and also Cain's Legacy, I feel like I recovered who my brother was, and I really had to grieve for the fact that we never were able to have a relationship.
Mm. Well,
and so one of the things I do with my patients is, I don't lobby that they should have a relationship with an impossible sibling, but at least to try to understand them, to lay the groundwork, maybe it's possible.
Let's take a very short break, and we'll get back to our conversation. That's Jeannie Safer, a psychoanalyst. She specializes in the sibling relationship. That's what we're talking about in this hour of Radio Times. Wrote a book called Cain's Legacy and The Normal One. To join the conversation, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We have Jeffrey Kluger waiting in the wings, science editor for Time Magazine. Also wrote a book about siblings. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen. We are talking about siblings in this hour of the show. Here's a clip from the very first episode of Frasier, setting up the rivalry between the two psychologist brothers, Niles and Frasier Crane.
You haven't heard a word I said.
Oh, Niles, you're a psychiatrist. You know what it's like to listen to people prattling on endlessly about their mundane lives.
Touché. And on that subject, I heard your show today.
And?
You know what I think about pop psychiatry.
Yes, I know what you think about everything. When was the last time you had an unexpressed thought?
I'm having one now.
Well, joining us now is Jeffrey Kluker. He's the science editor for Time magazine, wrote a book a couple of years ago called The Sibling Effect, What the Bonds Among Brothers and Sisters Reveal About Us. And Jeffrey Kluker, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much for having me again.
You're welcome. And again, talking with Jeannie Safer, she's a psychoanalyst, and she's written a couple of books about siblings as well, including Cain's Legacy and The Normal One. Jeffrey Kluker, what is the sibling effect?
Well, the sibling effect is broadly the socializing power our sibs have over us, both for better or worse, but typically it's for better. As I say in the book, you know, our sibs are the people who are with us for the entire ride. Our parents leave us too early, our kids and our spouses come along too late, but our siblings are the people who were with us when our software lines were written, when our behavioral code was laid down. They know us better than anyone will ever know us, if only because they've been with us through so many developmental stages. They're the people with whom you can speak your shorthand, and they're the people who you sort of test drove life with them before you went out into the world. I realize I've mixed about seven metaphors
here.
You have,
so that's okay. It works. It works. Your book is also about your three brothers, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Exactly. And I had, and it's funny because while you were in commercial, I was typing out a Facebook message to my older brother whose birthday is today.
Goodness.
So, yeah, especially my four full brothers and I have grown up in a very, very close unit. We also have had lots of permutations on sibling relationships. We have a half-brother and a half-sister with whom we're very close and whom we love deeply. We had two stepsisters for a brief period a very long time ago, and we've lost touch with them. But we sampled from the entire buffet of sibling relationships in our lives.
And I got the feeling that early on when you were growing up with your brothers, your parents were divorcing. It sounds like it was a pretty ugly situation, but that seemed to bring the brothers together.
That's right. Turbulence often does that. When the executive relationship in a family, which is the parental relationship, when that one breaks down, the sibs tend to double down on the intimacy and the support they get from one another. And interestingly, one of the studies I read that I wrote about in the book looked at siblings who in adult life sort of crossed a certain threshold. I forget how the study quantified it, but crossed a certain threshold of involvement in one another's lives and closeness with one another. And they asked all of the people who qualified for that part of the sample group if there was a pivot point in their lives that led to that. And there was no majority incident, you know, in some cases it was illness, in some cases it was bankruptcy, in some cases it was death of a parent. But the plurality of respondents said divorce. Divorce seemed to be the thing that sort of turbocharged this closeness more than any other life trauma.
Does that make sense to you, Jeannie Safer?
It does, in relationships that are as wonderful as yours were. I can tell you about a lot of relationships where siblings were at each other's throats when there were problems, alas, later in life. It depends on those early bonds and families where they're there. You really turn to each other. But no, that's not true of all families. I think that there's a certain ideal that we have that's going to happen, and people who grew up in families where that doesn't happen feel like there's something terribly wrong with them, and everybody else has the perfect family.
And that's actually a fair point. And, you know, my book sort of argues for the sibling ideal, and I sort of say that directly and candidly. In the book, I do acknowledge at a few points that, you know, sibling relationships fall all across the spectrum, and there are some sibling relationships, like other relationships in your lives, that for the safety of you and those around you need to be terminated or limited or circumscribed, you know, just to
make
sure.
But we don't feel we're supposed to do it with our siblings. That's the problem. And sometimes we have to.
But we feel, let me just jump in here, you're saying, Jeannie, is what, because they're our siblings, they're part of our biology, they're part of our history, we can't leave them behind?
We can't leave them behind inside us. Sometimes we can't have a relationship with them, or we have to keep them at arm's length. What I like to say is that, yes, blood is thicker than water, but you don't necessarily have to drink it.
Ah.
Now, I'm looking at the dark side.
You know, you sure are. That's a vampire reference there here.
Well, I think it's very important that we be aware of this. I think siblings can be remarkably wonderful, probably the most intimate relationship in life in certain ways. And I think it can also be a terrible source of grief later in life. It's the issue that there are a lot of siblings later in life who don't get along. It's not that tiny a percentage, but they mostly regret it.
Well, Jeffrey, let me give you a chance to weigh in on that. And on the other hand, Jeffrey Kluger.
Oh, I thought there was a very specific question.
No. I'm being very vague there.
There is truth in that there are sibs who aren't happy later in life, that aren't who don't remain close later in life.
Or who never were. Right.
I'm sorry?
Or
who never were, right.
Right.
What I'm saying is that when that doesn't happen, a powerful resource is being given up on. You know, I say in the book, it's a little bit like having, you know, 1,000 acres of great farmland. You can always do your shopping at a green market, but think of what you're allowing to lie fallow. And I think if sibling relationships are protected in childhood, or at least are developed in childhood, and are cultivated in adulthood and throughout life, I think there's a lot that's worth keeping and protecting about them. Look, my brothers and I, you know, there's a ton of stuff we don't get along about. That's, you know, such is the case in all human relationships.
Oh, no, but that's from a basis of real love. Mm. I guess where we have differences is that I think if there is that basis or if it can be cultivated, then it's wonderful. But we also have to address and accept that it can't always be. It's not always a thousand fertile acres.
Sure. Right. Go ahead, Jeffrey.
If sibling relationships are irreparably broken early in life, they're irreparably broken. That's the definition of the word irreparable. And, you know, marriages are like that, and friendships are like that, and all manner of relationships are like that. I sort of, as the lawyers will say, I stipulate that. I grant you that if there's nothing to fix, there's nothing to fix. But if there's anything to work on, you know, awkward sibling relationships can be made better.
I absolutely agree.
Sibling relationships can be made good, and good sibling relationships can be made great. And I think it all comes from understanding and valuing what those relationships are to you. I also think that in some ways, as we get older, and when I say older, I'm talking about aging from young adulthood into mature adulthood. I think the development of families, when siblings begin having their own nuclear families, I think rather than driving those units apart, that can exert the accumulation of bodies, can exert a certain gravity that pulls.
Yes, I agree with you. It really can be a rapprochement in siblings that don't get along through their children. Yes, that can happen. But I just want to make the point that people shouldn't feel bad if their own lives were such that that's not possible. Mm-hmm. I still think you should try in terms of understanding. But it can't always be done, and we should, because people come to me, I mean, I specialize in having people who can't do that or who don't want to do that, and they feel like outsiders to the world.
Well, I need to just make sure everyone knows who our guests are and what we're talking about. We are talking about the sibling relationship. Jeannie Safer is a psychoanalyst. She specializes in the sibling relationship. Jeffrey Kluger, science editor for Time magazine. Looks like we have some calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at @whyyradiotimes. Jeff, I do want to pick up on something that Jeannie and I were talking about before you joined our conversation, and this had to do with parental favoritism. I know that's something that you have written about, you have talked about as well, and the fact that children have different relationships with their different parents, that's probably a very good thing. But I'd be just curious about your perspective on this piece of that relationship.
Well, favoritism, I think it's the dark and yet universally known secret about parenting. The parents know it, the kids know it, everyone else knows it. It's impossible, given all of the complexity, all of the moving parts in human personalities, it's impossible for an adult in a household not to connect better with one child more than the one child than the other. That's simply in the nature of human relationships. If I am a, you know, a quiet and reflective parent, which I'm not, and I have a child who is equally so.
But an honest one.
An honest, right, exactly. I'm going to connect better with that child than I will with my exuberant, flamboyant, louder child who sometimes, you know, may make me feel a little bit overwhelmed. Mm. That is in the nature of things. But connecting with one child more than the other is not the same as loving that child more than the other. And
that's an important distinction.
A fine distinction, but it's not a fine distinction. That's what in all of the writing I've done about this, I've tried to address that sense of guilt that parents feel. You can love them equally, right, and at the same time say, boy, if I got to sit down for an hour with one child, this is just the one that, you know, who's yes. more like me. I resonate yes. in a different way with this child.
Go ahead, Jeannie, then we have some callers that want to join us.
No, I absolutely agree with you on that. And I think that it's impossible, and we don't need to love equally. We need to love specially to everyone.
Right.
But
right.
sometimes, you know, an interesting twist on this is that if there are parts of yourself that you're not so fond of and you see those parts reflected in a child, mm-hmm. you want to flee it. You want to flee it.
But I think for the child, as you both are saying, you know, it shouldn't be, and hopefully it's not about love. It's just about who you feel connection to or a stronger bond with. But I think for the right. child, Jeannie, it can feel like you love the other person more than you love me.
Yes.
Right. And I think it's worth – I'm sorry. I feel like I cut you off. Why don't you
– Yeah, go ahead, Jeannie.
No. I'm agreeing.
All right. Go ahead, Jeffrey, then.
Because what I was going to say is that's not necessarily something that leaves indelible marks on a child. Everyone in my nuclear household, as we were growing up, it was mostly a one-parent family. We all knew that my mother's favorite was our youngest mm-hmm. brother. We joked about that. It was an open secret. There are times when I was a kid when it galled me. There were times when I was a kid when I used that fact as a way of arguing. My mother, to her credit, always denied it. She would never admit it. And now it's just something we joke about. It was an open secret. I mean, You're talking
about people who are sane, Jeffrey.
Well, no.
They don't go to see psychoanalysts, I guess.
No,
they do. They do. But I'm talking about parents who really get it and who have wisdom and who probably had good parents themselves. I just want to just make sure that we have the whole spectrum here. Of course, these are ideals. They happen a lot, and I think it's a wonderful thing. And I wish I would have had it. But there are plenty of people who will never have it, and they need to find sisters and brothers who are psychological siblings.
Right.
Well, and just
if the biological ones don't work.
Exactly right. They need to find sibs. You mean outside of the family siblings?
Yes. Sure. Yeah. Yes.
Well, and I have to say, my brother and sister, my sister and I both agree that our brother is a much nicer person than us and much, much beloved in the family. So there was a complete consensus on that. Let me get Erin from Ambler to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Erin. Go ahead. You're on the air. Do we have Erin? Erin, go ahead. You are on the air. Yes, go ahead, Erin.
Hi.
Yes.
My brother was adopted as a baby. My parents have some infertility issues, and then I was born a year later, biological child to them. And we were raised in a very happy, healthy family. And then when my brother went through his angsty teenage years, he sort of rebelled. And because it was an open adoption, he was able to find his biological parents. And they lived a few towns over, and he used to start visiting them. And he had six younger brothers and sisters. And the nature versus nurture side of things was that he and my parents never really jived. They were different people, and then as soon as I met his siblings, they were him. That was his family, even though we were his family for 18 years of his life. Except that he sort of left us, and he and my parents haven't spoken in probably a decade, and I'm still in the middle. I try to repair the relationship, or I try to keep in contact with him, and I have a very great bond with my parents, but it's sort of like a death in our family that we don't really have a brother or a son anymore.
That's really a sad story, Erin. And Jeannie, I know you want to respond. Go ahead.
Well, Erin, I think that there must have been things that went on between your brother and your parents that led to that, because you don't have to have everything in common with your child in order to relate to them or to appreciate them. He must have felt, for lots of real reasons also, that you were the one that they really looked to.
Mm.
And this is a very sad thing. You know, over time, this may change. You may be able to approach him, write him a letter, not an email.
Not an email. A letter's more
not
personal.
Not an email. Write him a real letter and say that you miss him, that you grew up together, you have a history together, that he's the only one that knows your childhood and you know his, and that you would like to try.
Erin,
good luck to you.
Yeah, good luck to you. Jeffrey, anything you want to add to that?
Nothing, except that I think that's an excellent idea about being candid and approaching. I can say that that when my brothers and I got to know our half-siblings, who are 10 years younger than us, we didn't really know them until they were in their 20s. It was sort of a, you know, perverse family secret. And when we got to know them, it was a letter, a handwritten letter. This is before the days of email. That at least broke that ice and let them know that we were available, that they had four brothers, that we had known about them, they hadn't known about us. We would stay out of their way until they were ready to communicate with us.
That is terrific.
That
That's your secret weapon. The letter is a secret weapon.
Did that work, Jeffrey?
Reconciliation.
Well, exactly. And I think had we not sent it, we wouldn't have the extraordinary relationships we have today with our half-sibs.
Well, that's really a very moving thing, that you were able to do that, that you didn't just sit around and wait for the other person to take the lead or just be resentful. That's what makes the difference.
Right.
They won't always respond, but at least you could say, I did everything I could do.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's right. And at some points, it's all about being able to say, and I don't mean this to sound cold, but it's a little bit about being able to say, I've checked that box, and I mean a deep emotional box, but I have made the effort I need to make, and if it doesn't yield anything, I know in my heart that I've acted with sincerity and earnestness.
Well, Jeffrey Kluger, on that note, we're going to say goodbye to you, and thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you so much for having
me. You're welcome. He's the science editor for Time Magazine. Wrote a book a couple of years ago. In fact, was a guest on Radio Times talking about it, called The Sibling Effect, What the Bonds Among Brothers and Sisters Reveal About Us. Jeannie Safer staying with us for the rest of the hour. She's a psychoanalyst, wrote Cain's Legacy and The Normal One. And we have Jonathan Caspi waiting in the wings. He'll be joining our conversation, talking more about siblings. 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoe, and we are talking about siblings in this hour of the show. Here's a clip from Ferris Bueller's Day Off, in which Ferris's sister, played by Jennifer Grey, is at police headquarters talking with a delinquent, played by Charlie Sheen.
All right. You want to know what's wrong?
I know what's wrong. Just want to hear you say it.
In a nutshell, I hate my brother. How's that?
That's cool. Did you blow him away or something?
No, not yet. See, I went home to confirm that the shithead was ditching school, and when I was there, a guy broke into the house. I called the cops, and they picked me up for making a phony phone call.
What do you care if your brother ditches school?
Why should he get to ditch when everybody else has to go?
You could ditch.
Yeah. I'd get caught.
So you're pissed off because he ditches and doesn't get caught, is that it?
Basically.
Basically. And your problem is you.
Excuse me?
Excuse you. You ought to spend a little more time dealing with yourself, a little less time worrying about what your brother does.
And again, a scene from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Jeannie Safer with us the full hour of Radio Times today. She's a psychoanalyst who works with siblings. And joining us now is Jonathan Caspi, professor in the Department of Family and Child Studies at Montclair State University, an expert in sibling relationships, including aggression, sibling abuse. And Jonathan Caspi, nice to have you with us on Radio
Thanks,
Times.
Right.
You're very welcome. You're kind of joining the conversation halfway through. We've touched on a number of things. We haven't talked directly about aggression, I guess, between siblings. How common is that?
It's exceptionally common. The thing that parents complain to their pediatricians the most about. I hear it a lot from parents, and research bears it out. Almost all relationships have some aggression in them.
And when I'm thinking about sibling aggression. Sometimes it's you know, teasing and making fun of a sibling, a brother or sister. Sometimes it's much more pernicious than that. What is acceptable, I guess, and what is really unacceptable from your perspective?
Well, so the assumption that teasing is not pernicious is interesting, because some of the research suggests that teasing and verbal abuse is more harmful in some ways than physical abuse, in that you know, a broken bone may heal, but those wounds of being called fat and ugly and unlovable throughout your childhood stay with you throughout your life, although that's a little complicated because most physical aggression is accompanied by some sort of verbal aggression, too. This is really the dark side of sibling relationships, and I appreciated the upside discussion earlier. but one of the things that folks don't tend to not know about is that the most common form of child maltreatment, of family violence, is perpetrated by siblings, and it far outnumbers parental abuse of children and peer bullying and domestic violence.
And I'm assuming it's based on things like jealousy and the kinds of competition that siblings often feel with each other. What else do we need to know? What is at the root of this, Jonathan Caspi?
Well, you've spoken a lot on the show already about favoritism, and that tends to be very corrosive. And some of the other, you know, one of the things you've heard is that if there's these perceptions of favoritism or parents clearly treating their one child better than the other, that it makes for problematic sibling relationships. And the other pieces that kind of go with why you might have aggression are a lot of comparison, which breeds competition, and lack of supervision. And interestingly, something that folks often forget is boredom. You know, when kids are left alone in an unstructured environment and they're have nothing else to do, it's more exciting to torment somebody who is smaller than you, or bigger if you have somebody
or
else
bigger
at your back. Yeah. You know, if you imagine siblings in the back seat of a long car trip and they're bored, it's more fun to, you know, try to poke your finger in their cheek and say, I'm not touching you, you know. So those kind of things together are some of the elements that are associated with
And are you also telling us that we need to take this much more seriously than we do?
Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jonathan, and then I'll get you in, Jeannie.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, not only is it extremely widespread, that is more widespread than, you know, like I said, parental abuse or peer bullying, but also there's a substantial body of research now that shows its detrimental effects, and it may even be more harmful than parental abuse because it's sort of a double whammy. The kids are being, you know, they're not safe in their own homes, and then their parents are neglecting to do the job of protecting them, which is another form of abuse. So it's something that's not spoken about, and surprisingly, even a lot of folks in child protective services aren't trained in this, and a lot of therapists aren't either. And so, yes, it needs a lot more attention.
Jeannie Safer, why do you think we don't take this seriously enough?
I think the need to deny is profound in human nature, and parents don't want to look at the fact that there's a terrible situation going on right under their noses. I mean, I can tell you the number of people that I see who had one whose brother tried to set her on fire, and the parents decided to deal with it by not having matches in the house.
Oh, wow.
I mean, this is not unusual in a lot of families. There is so much denial by the parents, and I think the abandonment of the parents is as devastating as the violence from the sibling. And they're also, the child who was harmed is sometimes blamed for causing it, and is also lobbied by the parents to make friends with the aggressor. This is a real problem. It's actually more serious in a way than bullying by strangers. And very often, children who bully other children in the school started at home.
Ah, working on their younger brother or sister, or perhaps even older brother or sister.
That's right.
So, Jonathan Caspi, from your perspective, then we'll get to our callers here. How do you suggest parents intervene?
Well, I think Jean is right that often parents don't see it as a serious issue, and I think it's even larger than that. The violence between siblings is considered to be normal behavior.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you think about who's allowed to punch a child, parents are not allowed to do that, and teachers and coaches and even the neighborhood kid, if he or she punches your child, you would be upset about it. But a lot of times parents and others will say, well, boys will be boys, that's what brothers do. So it legitimizes it.
Yes.
So one of the things that, parents can do, but everybody can do, is to pay more attention to it and think about it as something that is serious and not something that is normal.
To the point of, if you see people fighting, you want to intervene. I mean, to the point of intervention, Jonathan Caspi?
If aggression gets to the point where it's out to systematically harm or dominate another child in the house, then intervention is definitely needed. Mm-hmm. And if it seems like it's creeping in that direction, I would say reaching out to a therapist to do some work before it becomes more serious is recommended. And what a lot of therapists will do is address some of the issues that you've already covered in the show today, such as favoritism and how to parent your kids differently and yet equitably.
I mean, Jeannie, it's really, it seems like in our whole conversation talking about siblings, everything seems to go back to the parents. And I guess rightly so.
Well, not
right?
Everything. This, once you're out of the house, your life is your own. As Lincoln said, you're responsible for your own face at the age of 40. But I think one of the ways that we can be responsible is to look to see what our parents did and what they had to do, not to blame them, but to see what was done. I had one, as you were just talking about this, one woman came to me. Her brother was a foot fetishist and used to steal her shoes. And it was a horrible thing. And she begged her parents for a lock on her door. They wouldn't do it. So she went to the school counselor as a little girl to get a lock on her door. I was so impressed.
But that's a lot for a child to take on as their responsibility. Let me get some callers in. We have Veronica from Wilmington joining us on Radio Times. Hi, Veronica. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you? Thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I was just calling because my brother and I have kids now. We were very close before. And now that the kids are older, my brother has a 7 and a 5-year-old, and I have a 2 and a 4-year-old. And we have very, very different ways to raising them. Mm-hmm. And every time we get together now, it created a lot of tension because nobody's allowed to say anything. My sister-in-law is really tight and very free about what she's teaching and raising them, the way they're raising their child. And we are very much stricter, on the stricter side. So we're getting together less often now, and I don't know how to phrase that because I really enjoyed having that relationship with my brother before, and I don't know which way to go in regards to that.
Well, Veronica, no,
it's really affecting.
Yeah, no, it's an excellent question. And Jeannie, sounds like you want to say something, but Jonathan, I'd like to hear from you as well.
No, please go ahead.
Yeah, okay. Jonathan, what do you say back to Veronica?
I guess my first question is your brother feeling the same way?
Do you know the answer to that?
He actually doesn't really want to talk about it, and he really is kind of like shutting down in regards to that. He tends to like, okay, if you don't like it, like we kind of just need to go. We don't need to get into a confrontation, mostly because I kind of have the confrontation with my sister-in-law. He's not the one actually taking charge of it. So I really don't want to have this conversation with my sister-in-law. I really want to have it with my brother.
Right. Sounds like he's in the middle between the two of you. Jonathan, anything you want to add to that?
I mean, it's a frustrating situation, Veronica. If your brother doesn't want to participate, it really is his role. It's been very hard for you to address it directly with your sister-in-law. And it sounds like even though you had a nice relationship earlier, there might be other pieces that your brother's responding to, you know, feeling like maybe his parenting is being judged.
What do you think, Jeannie? Yeah, what do you think?
Yes, I agree with what was just said. And it may be, I was thinking of some possibilities. Can you ever see your brother alone without the family? Maybe, hopefully, when these kids grow up, it won't be such a burden. And you'll be able, you know, after they stop needing discipline so much. But there's ways that you can, you don't have to be with the kids all the time.
Uh-huh.
That might be a possibility.
So to get together somehow without the children. Well, there's some things, Veronica, to think about, and we wish you the best of luck in dealing with that situation. It's a tricky one. Let's see what Natalie from Madison, New Jersey, has to say. Natalie, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. I was just wondering, with the different parenting styles that parents have, how that tends to create different sibling rivalries. Does a very controlling parent, do they... children tend to not form bonds amongst themselves as much, and then a less controlling parent, the children tend to get closer, or is there just no set pattern and it varies?
What do you think, Jonathan? Are there patterns to kind of parenting that can tell us something about relationships, or is it just each situation unique unto itself?
No, there's definitely patterns in parenting, and I hope Natalie's not trying to make a choice between those two.
Yeah, there are many more choices than that, right?
Yeah. I want my kids to grow up very close, and so my goal is to do what's best for them, and how do I best do that?
Yeah, well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. It's interesting. One of the things that sort of gets in the way of positive sibling relationships is when parents try to intervene and meddle too much in their children's relationship. They need to have their own relationship and go through their own conflicts and, be taught the skills of how to do that, but be able to do that on their own so that they don't always become dependent on one of the parents or somebody else to get them through the tough times. But also, parents often will intervene in sibling relationships only when problems occur, and they often do that on siding with the younger child against the older. You should know better. You're bigger. You're older. Let your younger sibling play with that or have that, and that only continues to build resentment and outsider status for the older child. Sibling loyalty and sibling support are in environments where siblings have the opportunity to demonstrate that, and then parents reinforce it and praise it and say, I love it when you two are sharing, I love it the way you're getting along and you're playing with each other. That doesn't often get the kind of attention it should, but that's that makes a big difference.
We're almost out of time here. Jeannie, any final words from
you? Yes, I have a suggestion, another suggestion, a different one, additional one. I think as a parent, probably the best surprising thing you can do for your children is to think about your own childhood, to think about your relationship with your own parents and your own siblings. And when you understand that, you will be less likely to project your own desires on your children and see them more as themselves.
Well, on that note, Jeannie Safer, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Delighted.
And Jonathan Caspi, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And we spoke with Jeffrey Kluger in the middle of the show. This is, of course, We Are Family, Sister Sledge. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Builder, Emily Bryant and John Ahrens with Sophie Reed. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us.